Welcome to The Weekly. I'm Jeremy.
I'm Matt.
Hey, Matt.
Hello.
And so Chris can't be with us this week. So Matt's helping out and appreciate it very much. So this week on The Weekly. So Fiery Angels, the case file number 2 for the Blade Runner RPG. Solo Trek, Captain's Log books released by Modiphius for the 2D20 system. The Warhammer 40K Bunker, a way to sell their magazines and make you buy more minis. And I guess it's all peer pressure based now. And then Warlord Games was acquired. So a majority share acquisition by another British hobby company. So we'll see if that's a good or a bad thing. So let's start with something that we're very excited about that just got announced. So Fiery Angels and Replicant Rebellion were revealed for the Blade Runner RPG.
So, yay.
All right. Yeah, so people have been asking, when's the next case file? When's the next case file? And there were threads that we could have tied up with what we did for our first actual play. But I was really afraid of like stepping on the toes of what they were going to do next. So if we did something in our like totally improvised session that like closed some doors to their whole second case file, that would have been brutal. So yeah, I'm glad we waited. And they're getting it out in a pretty timely manner. That's it's pretty fast compared to how much development must go into that. So what is Fiery Angels? So Fiery Angels is going to be a deluxe case file module, similar to what came in the Blade Runner starter set with the Electric Dreams case file 1. And then the Replicant Rebellion will be a source book, so just a hardcover book. So early access and pre-order will be available on the Free League website Q3 of this year, so in the next couple of months, with a Q4 release. So the end of the year physical release, but pre-orders will be happening sooner. And the Replicant Rebellion source book is slated for 2024. So we don't have details on that, but that'll be a fun addition to kind of what's going on, especially in that time period, because it's the very beginning of the Replicant Rebellion. So fun stuff. Early days. All right.
Yeah.
So they say about this case file number 2, so it's the same deluxe format as we had with Electric Dreams, and that means we're going to get a ton of in-world handouts and photos and maps, plus the investigative scenario for the case. And in this second case file, we'll be trying to infiltrate starting with a suspect that was arrested. Well, he was trying to infiltrate the Wallace Corporation memory vaults. So that's going to lead us to explore the boundaries of replicant technology and its consequences. So I think we were already doing that in case file 1, but even more so this time. So we're going to go deeper into the memory game.
More Wallace goons already. I can sense
yes.
it.
Yes, black spinners aplenty. Yes. So they're also saying that this will work as a standalone adventure. So if you haven't played case file number 1, you can just start with this one. But if you have, there will be some continuation of story elements from that first narrative. So I like that idea. And, you know, they're talking about this being like a trilogy similar to what they did with Alien, of 3 case files that have, you know, connective tissue. So that's good. So inside the box, so it'll be a box set. You'll get a scenario book with the locations, the scenario and characters, events, and all that good stuff. And then a manila envelope containing 20 handouts, including various in-world artifacts and Esper photos. And then half a dozen full-color double-sided maps for all the locations. And if you play this game in person, I think it makes a really interesting gaming table, because as things evolve, just like an investigator, you know, would on his desk or on some bulletin board, you're just spreading photos and maps everywhere. So you have this like visual representation of the case becoming more and more complicated and things getting denser and denser and more people getting involved and people being eliminated because people, you know, will be killed. So it's really nice what they did with all of this physical stuff. So we can recreate that, you know, fairly well on the virtual tabletop, but I think in person these case files work really well. It's just so tactile, and you know, the Esper photos, they encourage you to just, you know, pick them up and stick your nose in it, just like as if you were digitally, you know, zooming into it to look for details. So good stuff.
Enhance.
The analog version. And a little bit about the Replicant Rebellion. So this will expand the scope of the core game. So it's going to allow you to join the ranks of the Replicant Underground. It's going to be the same setting of 2037, so set kind of exactly between the two movies. And you're going to be an independent cell loosely organized under Frasia Sagapur. So I think she's the one-eyed woman from 2049. Yeah. So okay. the Nexus 8 that removed her eye so she could never be identified. And so you're going to be helping basically fugitive Nexus 8s elude capture and sabotaging installations of the replicant industry. So fun stuff. So the book will include an overview of the history of the organization, so the Replicant Underground, how to play a Replicant Underground campaign, and several new character archetypes that will be specific to these type of replicants, and then half a dozen, so six complete operations, which will be adventures that you can play for your cell of the Replicant Underground. So yeah, we'll see how that goes. That should be a fun way to kind of, you know, if you're not quite enjoying the investigation part of it, this is going to be probably more tactical and more, you know, espionage and sabotage and even terrorism, you know, with the underground. So definitely a different play style.
Yeah, and there are, you know, just being in the Blade Runner Facebook group, there are a lot of people looking for that, you know, a more, I guess, traditional cyberpunk approach to Blade Runner, which isn't what I'm in it for, but if they can do it and it's good, that's cool. Mm-hmm. I think it's interesting in the context of our game.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you could probably mine that for ideas related to Will's replicant character.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
You know, he developed a really interesting life path in that adventure.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I think the call of the Replicant Underground could be pretty interesting. And also what the new archetypes are, like how they're thinking about playing these types of characters. Yeah, it should be fun, and definitely will give you a break. I just wonder if I really like how the shifts in the day. You know, you get four shifts and how that works for kind of a timetable. And it really makes it puts the pressure on the investigation and things. So I wonder if there's going to be time-based elements in the replicant gameplay, or if it's going to be a little bit more freeform, like the campaign, you know, kind of like a cinematic campaign or cinematic adventure versus a regular campaign in Aliens. I wonder if they're going to kind of free you from these time elements and these events that happen at certain times and just let you, like, you know, plan heists, you know, basically like plan jobs where you're doing different things. You have like a mission to fulfill, but it doesn't have that same kind of time crunch that an investigation would.
Yeah. You said there were like six missions in it.
Yes. Yeah.
That's a lot. Mm-hmm. Maybe there's a little of both. Maybe they'll have some that have the time crunch where, you know, you have to get something done by a certain time, and then more free form.
Yeah. That the shifts worked a lot better than I thought they would. So I really enjoyed, how that worked out for the investigation. So yeah, we'll see what changes they make. And I think they have, you know, really good thinking. So they'll probably be able to tune this to play well. I've played a few, you know, sessions of the cinematic adventure for Alien, but I've not played anything that's just a straightforward campaign yet. So I'm curious if Alien plays as well without that kind of tension and those hidden agendas and things as it does, the cinematic versus, you know, just more freeform campaign. So this may be a similar thing. It opens the game up a bit, or just gives you different focus.
The criticism I heard of the Aliens one was, once you just, if you go for a campaign, then it's really just sort of a sci-fi game with alien level tech. It's not really an alien game anymore.
Right.
Which,
every session running into xenomorphs would make it a little bit, a little bit exhausting. How is this keep happening to us?
Yeah.
All right. So a little quote from their press release. So a neon noir wonderland that'll take your breath away one way or another. An evocative world of conflicts and contrasts that dares to ask the hard questions and investigate the powers of empathy, the poisons of fear, and the burdens of being human during inhumane times. An iconic and unforgiving playground of endless possibilities that picks you up, slaps you in the face, tells you to wake up, time to live or time to die. Yeah, so I like the tone that they've set for this. I think works really well. So yeah, if you enjoyed the first part, the second part is on its way, as well as a source.
What was that overarching campaign name for the whole thing?
Oh, you've got me. It was
something about death or something.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, it was like Immortal, the Immortal Game. Yeah.
The Immortal Game, yeah.
Yes, yes, yes.
Because remember when we finished, I think it was in our debrief, like, yes. Will kind of figured it out before like we did. Right. Like, oh,
they're going for immortality. Yeah, obviously.
Oh, yeah. I knew that.
Yeah, so we'll see how this next part of it connects to that. Because that'll be very cool if there's like enough, you know, narrative, you know, follow through that it has a nice, you know, satisfying feel. Nice. So, so looks good. Yeah, so that's coming soon for pre-order. And, of course, when you pre-order from Freeleague, they give you the digital version pretty quick. And then the physical copies will ship in a few months, 3 months or so.
And they even let you keep the digital version.
Whoa! Hey, you don't have to use it on their platform? Oh, my God. That's
amazing. No, you don't.
Wow. Yeah, Freeleague, that walled garden thing. I don't know. You're going to have to get in on that. All right. Well, so Blade Runner is a very interesting way to play. Nice investigation. And now another interesting way to play a game that's been out for a while already. So the Star Trek Adventures 2D20 system is going to have a new addition, what they're calling Captain's Log Solo Roleplay Games. Available for pre-order from Modiphius right now are a series of books. I think I saw multiple covers. It may just be multiple covers. It may be the same book, but their take on doing solo adventures with Star Trek stories. So take the con in your own Star Trek stories as we open pre-orders for the Captain's Log solo role-playing game. So launching the solo role-playing game frontier where you can become the captain of your own starship. So this will be a 326-page full-color standalone digest-size rulebook, so kind of a half-size rulebook with complete streamlined version of the 2D20 system for Star Trek Adventures. So it sounds a little bit like from this press release that there's actually – it might be like a journaling game similar to a lot of indie stuff that's come out where you're playing a game and there's consequences and you're rolling on tables and it's like it's generated as you're playing. But you're keeping your record. So your captain's log will kind of document, you know, the events of the role play and where you go. So it's a pretty clever kind of connection to make with Star Trek. I think that – it makes sense. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you can create or randomly generate your missions without a game master, decide on the actions of your crew, and complete it because you're the captain. But the game also will allow captains to play cooperatively with friends as their senior staff. So it's built for solo, but you can include other players that will just play the various officers on your ship. It doesn't limit you to... to what you're doing. So there are 100 plus random tables in the book, which will give you countless hours of adventure. And the nice thing that they do as well is you can play in any era of Star Trek. So they give you guidelines, you know, to talk about, like, you know, in the history, like who's made contact with who and what's available for you. So the core book has that kind of explanation of the eras of play, but this won't. The solo version won't limit you to playing any specific era, which I think is a very good move on their part. Yeah. As long as you don't play the Lower Decks version of Star Trek.
Like what's the one they just took off their streaming site? The one that was kind of like for kids.
Yes, yeah, I forget. Yeah, that one is gone now too, right? But they actually released Modiphius released a source book for Lower Decks, So they did they did Discovery and one of the other shows, and they also did Lower Decks. So if you want to play a cheesy animated version of Star Trek that kind of looks like, I don't know, Rick and Morty or Family Guy or something. Yeah, I don't know. That's very odd. So yeah, you can play anywhere between the 21st and 32nd century and choose from, it's just unique covers. Yeah, so they do a selection of cover designs featuring comm badges for each series. Yeah, so the I guess that's what the different covers were. The different covers are just decorative, and it kind of matches an era. So the comm badge design of different eras. So I wonder what's going to sell out. Probably Next Generation will be the cover to sell out.
Do they have the one that has the little kind of swirly one, like on Strange New Worlds?
Oh, I wonder. Yeah, I didn't see all of them. I'll have to take a closer look. Maybe they do, because they want to get everything in there. But
that'd be the one I want.
Nice. Nice. So yeah, you can pre-order copies now from the Modiphius website, and you'll receive the PDF copy right away, and then the print editions will be available this August. Wow, it's funny how that works, where you buy a book and it's the price of a book, and you get a free PDF because you paid full price on the site of the company instead of and the PDF is actually a portable thing. Yeah.
It's almost like they had to make a PDF anyway, so they gave it to you.
Right.
Wow.
And the PDF is already done because it doesn't need printed. Yeah, right. Yeah, that's so cool. Wow. Yeah, we could just put all your pre-press files in a walled VTT that isn't, readable by any other. Yeah, no, that's totally fine. That's a better way to go. Yeah, so that really stood out to me as an interesting approach to Star Trek, and maybe something, it might make fun content on the channel, so I might pick up one of these and see how it plays, and then just kind of play it on a live stream and see how ridiculous how ridiculous it gets. And then if it's too boring to just have me talking to myself and rolling tables, we can actually like bring in people to play officers and stuff. That would be really fun. Mm-hmm. Just do live.
Or you could just run the big game for us, Jeremy.
Oh yeah,
the real one.
run the full game. Yeah, yeah, yeah. The thing that they did a really good job of, the collections of adventures that they did for Star Trek Adventures originally are so good. They're like episodes of the show. They like, really have a nice shape to them, and a problem that needs to be solved, just like episodes of the Star Trek TV show. So running it as a weekly game session would be so fun, because it's like running a weekly TV show. It like really has, it really has that is so perfect. I really think they did, their thinking for the Star Trek game was really, really well done. Unfortunately,
go ahead.
Oh yeah, so Star Trek is like expanded into such a mess now, though, that it's hard to kind of stay focused on the stuff that's interesting in the universe without getting too weird, without having Michelle Yeoh show up and whatever. But what were you gonna say?
Oh, this is 2 weeks in a row you've had a topic that's gonna cost me money, which is annoying. Last week you had that little mini set for Gloomhaven.
Oh yeah.
And I was like, oh, I got a buddy that I'm gonna have to get this for. And now this week, so my in real life group, they always talk about playing the Star Trek RPG. Mm-hmm. But no one wants to do it, or they're all afraid or whatever. Mm-hmm. So if I get this, I can like give it to one of them and say, just try it, and then
yes,
maybe you'll run it,
Yeah, that's true. And they did, their pre-written adventures are so good, but if this book works well mechanically, then it'll help you kind of generate, your own adventures, and at least inspire you. Like the contents of a lot of the tables could inspire you to the kinds of things you can do, with your away teams or whatever. So yeah, pretty cool. So nice thinking, Modiphius. So we'll get some more Star Trek. Yeah, we did a playthrough of the starter set. A session of the original starter set when it came out on the channel earlier. And just recently we got some comments saying, yeah, we want more of this. This is fun. So, maybe we'll get some dust off the Star Trek and get that going. It's a fun setting. And if we can play original, if we can play TOS, then I'm happy. Oh, yeah.
I would love to do that.
Yeah. That's the era I want to play in, the very, there's mini skirts and go-go boots as part of the Federation, outfit, uniform, and all that good stuff. Yeah.
You don't want to do the Strange New World version of the original series where it kind of looks like it, but right. it also kind of looks way better.
Right. Yeah. I've only seen a couple episodes of Strange New Worlds. It's better than Discovery. Discovery really let me down. Yeah.
I'm really enjoying it. I've watched them all that are out so far.
Nice.
Yeah. What it does kind of works with the idea of running the game too, is they're hitting all those classic Star Trek beats, right? Mm-hmm. So there's an episode where they go to a planet that the Federation accidentally messed up, and so its technology is not where it's supposed to be. Mm-hmm. And you know, every Star Trek has one of those.
Right.
It has like the weird alien energy creature episode,
right.
the weird like virus episode, you know, they hit all the beats, you know, it's been very entertaining.
Oh, cool. Yeah. I'll have to take a look at that more. It was just, I think it was like Naked Spock or something in the first episode. I'm like, do I want to watch this? I don't know. Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, we'll take another look. All right. And, next thing, which is, it just seems like a real empty, real obvious promotional thing that they're trying to make sound like, hey, let's build a community. But if you pick up the issue 490 of White Dwarf coming out, I think, next month, you'll be involved in some scheme of Games Workshop called The Bunker. So beginning in issue 490, they're going to do one of the most significant changes to the magazine ever. So in other words, they want to sell more copies of the magazine because probably people aren't buying it anymore. And you'll get a chance to enter the bunker. So what they're calling the bunker is the world's largest gaming club. So the idea is, what if White Dwarf ran a Warhammer club and everyone was invited? So they're trying to make content that will help feed and kind of give activities and things for your own clubs, either based in your friendly local game store, the Warhammer local store, or even in your own home. So the studio teams will generate official Warhammer content for the bunker. So it's essentially what they're calling a meta club. So it'll be a network of satellite clubs all doing the same activities and generating points based on that. And they will all these activities will be published in a section of White Dwarf called Access Granted. So it's basically a newsletter for the bunker inside White Dwarf, which will offer activity packs for everyone to use. And so making it easier for the, you know, club organizers, they don't have to come up with things showing you how to run leagues or campaigns or things. So it'll change. Yeah. There'll be different offerings. So to get involved, all you have to do is, of course, buy the magazine. And then what they're launching with in the first issue is the Combat Patrol League. So a competitive league for running combat patrols, which are supposed to be balanced, small scale armies that you can buy one box for. Now, I think they're like $200 in Japan, but you can buy one box and have a big enough force that you can play a balanced game against another faction. So there'll be you can score points competing by playing games, winning games, or playing with painted combat patrols. And then all of this stuff will allow you to give titles to the people that win the most, who played the most, who painted the best, who defeated the most warlords. So there'll just be different systems to kind of keep people involved. And then you can report all this back to to White Dwarf, because I'm sure they can't wait to hear all about it. They will be posting that on what they're calling the satellite uplink section. So basically the readers section of White Dwarf is probably going to turn into all of the updates from the clubs. So photos of their painted models and then just updates on their different league results. So yeah, so every month there's going to be articles supporting this. So if you are happy with the content of White Dwarf as it is now, with the battle reports, the painting tutorials, and lore and information on releases, well, that's going to probably become a lot less, because now they got to cram all this stuff in there and support this. Get involved, get your club going, win the title of super warlord for your local area. So there'll be a way to level up your bunker rank and an overarching scoring system for each of the clubs. And so this will kind of, yeah, continue on. There'll be a challenge tracker card appearing in the issues that lets you keep track of everything. And so your activities can take you from the rank of trooper to Castellan. So they'll have all of these, of course, very Warhammery names for everything that your club does. So, yeah, they made a big deal like this. There's been a lot of Warhammer community updates and stuff about this, and it just sounds like they're desperate to try to sell more copies of the magazine, which is weird because, you know, trying to sell an analog magazine these days, they should just make it digital materials, a website you log into and you can download things instead of, you know, trying to get you to buy White Dwarf. But whatever.
It sounds like they just went back 20 years and copied the old Duelist Club thing for Wizards,
yeah,
for Magic.
Yes, right.
It just sounds like that, and they're attaching it to their magazine.
Right.
Which, that just shows you what Penny Pinchers Games Workshop is, because everybody else who sells magazines knows that they are loss leaders.
Like, right, right.
Magazines exist to get you to get some other thing.
Right. Yeah, they're a marketing expense. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And like White Dwarf, they're like, no, we're going to turn a profit on this thing that everyone else knows is just a marketing expense. And it's, that's ridiculous.
Yeah, and the thing that makes it sound like they're not going to manage it very well is they're saying there's going to be rotating support for Warhammer 40K, Age of Sigmar, and then also their skirmish games like Warcry, Warhammer Underworlds, and Kill Team. So that's way too much stuff to have scattered. I mean, they're never going to release enough content to keep everybody's club satisfied that's focusing, because nobody plays all of those games. So they're going to be waiting. Oh, maybe this month there'll be something for Warcry or something for Kill Team. Oh, no, not this month. I guess I'll try again next month. It seems, it seems a little silly. But the sections will be pullout. There'll be pullout sections available for your the various games. So, you know, the White Dwarf has, you know, decent production values and stuff. So they do produce stuff that is, you know, very usable. Oh, and the other funny thing that they said in this release was every issue will have a game state puzzle for you to solve. So there'll be like some diagram of, you know, where would you move your Necron Immortals in this, you know, if this was your round three, what would you do? So they'd be
okay. That is exactly what WotC used to do in their magazine.
Oh no.
Exactly. They would have a puzzle and you'd have to figure out how to use like so many magic cards to solve the puzzle. They did it every issue. Oh my God.
Yeah. Well, obviously they didn't maintain their copyright on that on that system because Games Workshop just stole it. That's weird, yeah. Yeah, it is a very outdated way to do anything. I mean, if they wanted to do something like this, you build a website and you make it a free website that's just going to promote, you know, just going to encourage people to put peer pressure on their friends to play and paint and buy new stuff to rank your club. And you just have it be this online thing. I think putting it in a magazine and, you know, having page count and having to plan all this stuff out months in advance to then, you know, roll out to publishers and get magazines in people's hands seems like a real slow old school way to do things. Yeah.
And this is going back to TSR screw ups. remember from Slaying the Dragon and Game Wizards when they talked about TSR tried to do a comic book, but to get around being in trouble with DC, they added a module in every comic book.
Yes, that's right.
And called it like a something other than a comic book. I don't remember what they called it. But nobody wanted to buy it because they would have to tear things out of it. And people that buy comic books don't do that.
Right, right, right.
So it's the same thing. If someone's like a diligent White Dwarf collector, they're not going to tear crap out of their magazine.
That's true. No, that's a very good point. Yeah, if they're going to include tokens and things, they want to keep these things intact. Yeah, it's really odd. This is you can see the motivation. You can see how this was pitched by marketing, but how old is their marketing department where they're like, you know, going back to like 90s, you know, early 2000s or late 90s ideas.
Oh, yeah, this is straight 90s tech right here.
Buy your magazine, fill in the coupon and mail it to us. And yeah. So yeah, we'll see. And basically, Games Workshop does not manage or maintain anything well at all. Their websites are garbage. Their apps are garbage. You know, White Dwarf is just kind of struggling to have, you know, slightly interesting content. Warhammer Plus is completely a barren wasteland, you know, with a subscription price on it. So it's, they don't manage anything well. So I don't know why they keep trying new things, why they keep initiating these new projects, because they don't run things well at all. And I feel sorry for, so now there's a lot of former Games Workshop employees that are now getting out onto YouTube and social media and talking about their experiences. And these poor people sound like they're super underpaid, super overworked, and just basically milked for their enthusiasm and love of this property to, you know, work ridiculous hours, be burdened by, you know, too many projects that they can't, you know, keep ahead of. And it just sounds like it's really run badly and, you know, just kind of benefiting from everyone just wanting to be involved, you know, in this property. So yeah, not great. so rant over, but
not the best,
not the best. Yeah. That was, so maybe Games Workshop is going to take over, take over that title. Ouch. But speaking of former Games Workshop employees, Warlord Games, founded by a couple of former employees of Games Workshop, has recently been acquired. So Hornby PLC, a very British-sounding company, purchased a 25% equity in Warlord Games Limited, giving them a majority share of the company. And they had a little, in kind of their newsletter update, they had a little statement about this. And Warlord Games says that we know change is sometimes a scary proposition, but we want to allay your fears. It's business as usual here at Warlord Games HQ. The existing management team will remain in place to drive business as we always have, and are fantastic with our fantastic customers foremost in our mind, and the innovative and fun approach we built to the company 16 years ago. So a little bit about Hornby PLC. They already manage the brands of Airfix, Humbrol, Scalextrix, and Corgi. So there are a lot of pretty popular British, I think mostly British. Airfix does a lot of plane model planes. Humbrol is glue and paint. Corgi is the die-cast metal cars, and Scalextrix is slot cars. So, so they're managing a bunch of, and I guess Hornby originally was model trains. So the original, Hornby's original focus was model trains. So it's a pretty diverse kind of old school model hobby company. So that's good. They probably know the markets and know the weaknesses and things. And so Warlord Games, if you don't know, they produce plastic, metal, and resin miniatures for many of their games, particularly their historical war games. And they have a really good, basically, I think the kind of premier or the best implemented system, the bold action system, is Warlords, and that really captures what they say about bold action is it's a really great way to capture the confusion of company scale engagements in a World War II setting, and I think probably bold action like World War II is like got to be really close to like right behind 40K as like a popular thing, because there are some hobby shops, you know, in North America, at least, that that's their main focus. That you know, Warhammer is like a minor thing. Like 40K is a tiny thing, and a lot of the, you know, fantasy stuff is pushed to the side. And bolt action, you know, World War II is their main the main thing they stick with. So it's got to have a decent player base.
And Hail Caesar, right?
Yes. Yeah, they have a lot of... Yeah, that was actually the first... So a little history on Warlord Games. Yeah, speaking of Hail Caesar, they were founded in 2007 by two former Games Workshop employees, the sales director, John Stallard, and the White Dwarf editor, Paul Sawyer. And they were made redundant, and they said, we'll get you. And they started their own company, but focused on historical, you know, 28mm wargaming. And they hired away Bob Naismith, the designer of the very first Space Marine, to work on their first plastic Roman Legionnaires. So they do a lot of really great historical games. You know, there's Sea Battles and almost every different era of games, you know, from Black Powder to, you know, medieval, you know, and then also, you know, the ancient Roman and ancient Greek. Yeah, they have a huge scale of the different games and game systems they offer. And a lot of those systems are written by, you know, really famous or really established game designers in those fields. And they even had like Rick Priestley did their Gates of Antares sci-fi setting for them and things. So there's a lot of really great people kind of from Games Workshop's past that have done some designs and things for Warlord games. So, yeah. So hopefully this means good things. Hopefully, you know, this majority share acquisition is going to mean the longevity and stability of Warlord games. They'll get to do what they want, but they'll have, you know, better support in the market and maybe more funding to kind of expand on what they're already doing and not increase the scope of their and also Warlords also has licenses for a lot of the 2000 AD properties. There's Judge Dredd skirmish game and a lot of other good stuff there, and also a franchise, Dad's Army, which I don't know, I haven't heard of before, but
like that was a TV show in Britain, wasn't it?
Oh, maybe, yeah, that's why I'm missing it. Both 2000 AD and maybe Dad's Army are British properties.
Isn't Hail Caesar, is that the 6mm ancient one?
Is it?
I feel like Chris was talking about it on her Instagram.
Oh, yeah. But I think Chris now is obsessed with shrinking things down, so I'm not sure. Maybe Hail Caesar. I think it might be 28, but yeah, Chris wants to do things in six and like just do some quick math to reduce the scales. I think so, because that's also the other game that's totally escaping me right now. But yeah, that's what it's going to be, is a reduced scale. So like a mini version of it. But I think they do. I'm not sure now. I'm trying to think, because I don't know if Warlord does any like Civil War era stuff or anything, or Revolutionary War. But I know there's a lot of like 6mm or at least 10mm. That might be a different company. But there's a little bit of comment from so Ollie Rayburn from Hornby, this is all so British. Ollie Rayburn from Hornby says, we're absolutely delighted to be able to join forces with Warlord Games, whose business we have always admired. And previously there was a collaboration between the two companies. So I think that was what kind of suggested that it might work out, that this might be a good move for them. They're saying, we very much look forward to working with the team there to maximize the potential of the business and use their significant experience and expertise for the benefit of the wider group. So, yeah, we may see some of the designs, because, you know, all of these companies together have a pretty huge amount of design for wargaming, historical modeling. So we may see some. Oh, yeah, they collaborated on their Blood Red Skies dogfighting game with Airfix. And that was the previous collaboration was Airfix owned by Hornby, and that's how they did Blood Red Skies. All right. So yeah, I hope that, I think, you know, Warlords is, I bought a lot of stuff from them. I really like Warlord Games as a company. They've got good, you know, good support, and they put out a good product. Unfortunately, like things they can't always, because of the when they're diversifying into various things, like their Beyond the Gates of Antares has kind of concluded. They did a couple of expansions, I don't know if it was a full second edition, but they did a whole other starter set for it. And now it's kind of being handed off to an independent publisher to keep things alive. So you'll still be able to purchase models and stuff, but it's not going to be an official like Warlord supported brand anymore with active new releases. It'll just be a supported game that was handed off to other parties. So yeah, so we'll see. Have you played any Warlord, or do you have any Warlord
I haven't. Mm-hmm. I've heard good things about Bolt Action, mm-hmm, and Hail Caesar. Mm-hmm. It's kind of funny, you talked about some stores in North America. There's actually this little coastal town over here called Cambria that my wife and I like to go to, mm-hmm, but it has like a model soldier store, a toy soldier store. Mm-hmm. And they sell a lot of stuff for bolt action. And I've always looked at it and thought it looked cool. But I went down there one time and they had an actual like Kubelwagen, a German officer car parked out front.
Oh, wow. Oh, yeah.
With the freaking Iron Cross painted on the side of it. And I was like, oh, okay. This might be getting a little too icky deep for me. Right. I don't know.
Yeah. Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. Mm. Yeah, you don't want to find out anyone's like Nazi dinnerware collection or anything beyond their interest in wargaming. Yeah, that's funny. Well, yeah. So I think it's a great system. It's got pinning. Units get pinned, and you're drawing activations randomly. So you give orders, and you kind of the activation order is randomized by drawing dice, out of a bag. So yeah, I like bolt action. I think that's it's a fun system, and it even works well when they ported it, because it just bolt action is what the Gates of Antares the sci-fi game runs on. So it works very well for that too, even though you're using energy weapons and mech crawlers and very different types of units. That system of pinning and activation works really well in sci-fi futuristic settings. All right,
is it pretty simple bookkeeping, like one hit, one kill kind of thing?
There's a lot of like kind of standardized tokens for representing everything. So yeah, it really works well for rounds of combat and clearing off tokens and deciding whether or not things are still pinned or what the effects are. It works really well. Yeah, they do a nice job. Cool. Yeah, I like it. It's just that it's too bad that especially that game lost its direct support, because it had a really fun, creative, the different factions and stuff were very interesting and creative, and they did nice models for them. But but as a system, and they can keep applying that, I think, to other settings.
Cool.
Bolt action. All right. So that will do it for this week. So where can people find you, Matt? I think you're on Threads. I have a feeling.
I'm on Threads. Yeah, I mean, I'm still on the dead bird site too, but I don't really go there much. it's at Hargald, HARGALD. And I also got my new Session Zero Forbidden Lands book up on DriveThru.
With beautiful art, I've heard it has beautiful art.
Oh, yeah, excellent art by Jeremy L. Yeah, nice. No, it's a lot of fun, and I may have already put a link to it in the chat. And it's actually it's for Forbidden Lands, but there's a bunch of cool name charts in there and some artifacts, and like Jeremy said, some cool art. So I think it could work for other things as well.
Very cool. And there will be a list of halfling names coming, right? you'll do an update.
Oh, I added them. Oh, I added the halfling names.
Excellent.
Yeah, they're ridiculous.
Oh, good. Perfect. Yeah. Yes.
Oh, and I also, this is a tangent, sorry. Mm-hmm. I added female orc names because somebody requested those.
Ah.
Because the whole lore in Forbidden Lands is that the female orcs are smarter than the male orcs. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And male orcs have trouble speaking because they have giant tusks coming out of their mouth.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So the female orcs deliberately give themselves names that are hard for the males to say.
Nice.
So that was a lot of fun making these string of letter kind of names that would be, you're supposed to put your fingers in your mouth and talk to imagine what it's like for a male orc to talk.
Right.
So it was like, oh, try this word.
Excellent.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Nice. Oh, that's very cool.
How about you?
Well, good. Yes. So I was a little ill yesterday, so I didn't quite get to the live stream for Abuse Cartoons. But regularly, I do that on Wednesday nights, North American time. Recently, so I draw my cartoon, my single panel gag cartoon. And you can find it at Abuse Cartoons on both Twitch and YouTube for the live stream. And if you want to read the cartoon, you go to gocomics.com/domesticabuse. And if you want to support what we're doing here, like our first and strongest member, Silgo, the patron that is our premier weakling. Thank you so much for your support. That was the patron that suggested we play Tales from the Loop, Matt. Yeah, because of the
stuff
we've been doing with Vason. And yeah, so if you'd like to support what we're doing here, you can go to upturntable.com, which is the website for everything. And we have channels on both YouTube and Twitch. And we also live stream this. This goes to Twitter and Facebook and a couple of different places. So you can come across the this feed in a couple of different ways. And if you want to support directly what we're doing and tell us what you'd like to see more of, like Tales from the Loop, you can become a patron at patreon.com/upturntable. So we have different levels to support us at to kind of let us know what you want to see more of and just help get involved. It can also sneak us little links for news stories for the weekly. That's a very useful thing. Excellent. Okay, so that'll do it for this week. We'll be back next week. And thank you again to Matt for helping me out this week. See you next time.
Bye.
Goodbye.